sell his birthright for what? Pot of porridge or stew, essentially. He was very, very hungry, and Jacob said, sell me your birthright. And what was the statement that Esau made about his birthright? Right, yeah, like, I don't care about a birthright, I'm going to die. And the text leaves it that way. He's satisfied with a bowl of stool and walks out. Right? Well, what do we know about the mother and the father and their relationship? What is Isaac and Rebekah's relationship to their sons? They had favorites. Who did Daddy favor?
Esau.
What's that?
Esau.
And Mom? Why? Well, when we met Mama, what was Mama's family's occupation? Sure, they're sheep herders, right? What's the family business of Isaac? They're sheep herders, right? What does Esau like to do? He likes to go off hunting, which means how much time is he spending on the family business? Not much. Now, I think we're going to see some things about Rebekah's family that is reflected in the family situation in Isaac with Isaac and Rebekah, right? So Esau has become an old man, and he decides that it's time to put his affairs in order. And so he speaks to Esau, and he says, Esau, I want you to go out and hunt, and I want you to prepare my favorite dish so that my soul may bless you before I die. Is his death imminent? He's just putting his affairs in order. Rebekah overhears Isaac's conversation with Esau, and she calls Jacob and relates Isaac's instructions and intentions for Esau. Essentially, she says, hey, I heard your father Isaac telling Esau, it's time. It's time to get the blessing. Now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go and get me two young goats so I can fix the dish that your father loves. Now, and I want you to go in there and get the blessing. Jacob, kind of, wait a minute. What if I go in there and he decides I'm a smooth man and he feels of me and he knows that it's me? He may end up cursing me. And what we're going to find out is that whatever the blessings and the curses were that the father speaks, they're irrevocable. Well, I think it's kind of funny because now you see the interaction between the mother and the son, because Rebekah will say, you're cursed beyond me, my son. Only obey my voice and go get them for me. I could almost hear this like, stop worrying about that. I'll take care of it. Go get the two goats I told you to get. This is not going to happen. You just go do this and I'll get things right. We'll get this to work. So Rebekah, she knows Isaac is what? What's his physical condition besides being old? He's blind. How does a blind person see? Through their hands, through their smell. There's some indication that sometimes those senses are enhanced when a person is blind. And she knows that that's how Isaac's going to determine who's in front of him. And so, what's her solution for that? Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out how this works. My imagination's worked on it several ways. But essentially, she takes the two young goats that she kills, while she's cooking that, she's skinning it, and she's making it possible to put this goat skin with the hair on it on his hands and on his neck, so that because when Jacob goes to feel, or when Isaac goes to feel of Jacob, she's got to convince him that it is Esau. She does something else, too. Gets some of Esau's best robes and gets that on Jacob. Now, Jacob will go in. In fact, we have to think about this. What does this tell you about Rebekah? Okay, well, I think there's that. She's trying to make things work out the way that God said they would work out, although I kind of wonder how much she had God in mind in this at all. But giving her the benefit of the doubt, let's say that. What did?
I just said she's going to make Jacob have the fortune here.
Yeah,
she's the
birthright. So she's going to try to make this work out her way. Well, I'm sure she did.
Seeing the hairy one sort of turned her off.
Well, I don't know about that, but so I want us to kind of put ourselves in this scene. Here's Isaac, this blind old man. He's in this tent. It's pretty quiet, and as we've learned, people can hear what goes on in those tents. Who do you think's at the door? Rebecca's probably there. Isaac's sitting in there alone. He's probably expecting Esau not to come for a while. In fact, I don't think we even have to speculate on that. Because Isaac asks, who has entered his tent? Who are you, my son? Now, I want you to watch here. There are three lies that Jacob will tell. The first lie is, I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you have told me. Get up, please. Sit and eat of my game, that you may bless me. Isaac wants to know how he found and prepared the game so quickly. Hunting usually takes some time. Isaac wants to know, well, Jacob tells his second lie. His second lie is what? God helped me. Wow. You realize what he's doing here? I think one of the things we have to realize is we're getting some revelation of Jacob's character here as well. He's throwing these lies around. I'm Esau. God help me. Does Jacob, what's Isaac's first reaction to all this? Yeah, he says, will you come over here? None of this makes sense. You're here too fast. You sound like Jacob. Let me feel of you. I wonder how Jacob felt right that minute. That could be a little nerve-wracking. Will this ruse work? Isaac is, even after feeling, he says, not really convinced. And he says, are you really my son, Esau? And Isaac tells his third lie. I am. Pretty emphatic. So Isaac asks for the food so that he may bless Jacob, who he thinks is Esau, but I think with some doubt, because the next thing he does. Isaac asks for one more confirmation. Please come close and kiss me, my son, so that he can do what? Smell the garments. And now he smells them, and they smell like Esau. Isaac responds, "See, the smell of my son is like the smell of the field which the Lord has blessed." And Isaac ends up being deceived, and he bestows the blessing on Esau. So let's look at verses 26 through 29 to see what the blessing is. Whoever has that, go ahead and read it. 27, 26 through 29. So this blessing, what does it do for Jacob? Puts him ahead of his brother. Puts him over everything. And some of it is a restatement even of some of the promises made to Abraham. One which was one thing that God said about it, whoever blesses you, I will bless, and whoever curses you, I will curse. But now the ruse has worked, and Jacob and Rebekah retreat. They're gone. Esau comes in almost, you know, this in my mind, I have this picture that Jacob's trying to rush this thing along to get it done before Esau can get back. And almost as soon as Jacob leaves, Esau comes in. And you can see how close this would be. And Esau comes to Isaac and says, "Let my father arise and eat of his son's game that you may bless me." He has no idea what's going on. He just walks in and does what he would do with his dad anytime. And Isaac, startled, says, "Who are you?" Can you imagine what Isaac is like right this minute? Esau, surprised at the reaction of his father, "Well, I'm your son, your firstborn, Esau." Notice Isaac is trembling. How do you feel when something has really shaken you? Have you ever been trembling over something that happened? And he says, "Was he then that hunted game and brought it to me, so that I ate all of it before you came and blessed him?" Now, I want you to think about how those words would hit Esau. Then Isaac says what devastates Esau. "Yes, and he shall be blessed." What he gave can't be taken back. Esau cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me, even me also, O my father." Can you hear it? Isaac says that Jacob deceitfully has taken away your blessing. And Esau in his despair says, "Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing." When people are upset, what do they generally forget? Their part in it. Yes, Jacob took his birthright, but it wasn't through some deceitful matter. It might have been mean-spirited. It might have been a lot of things. But Esau still had a choice on the birthright, and he despised it and gave it up willingly. Even if he wanted to get it back, he could not. On the second charge, Jacob is guilty as charged. He was deceitful, and he took it away. He took it away by deceit. Where does that leave Esau? And really, no place to go. In fact, his next question to his dad is, have you not reserved a blessing for me? Isn't there anything you can say to me? And Isaac replies, there's nothing to give. I made Jacob your master. All his relatives I've given to him as servants. With grain and new wine I have sustained him. Now as for you then, what can I do, my son? Is there any finality kind of in that? I mean, in fact, all Isaac can do is pronounce a prophecy about him. He says, well, you will live where the earth is not fertile. Your descendants will live by the sword. And you and your descendants will serve Jacob. His descendants will at times rebel and break the yoke, but for the most part, they will serve Jacob. And this is why the prophet Malachi starts out his prophecy with, Jacob I have loved, but Esau I've hated. And it's a prophecy about the doom of Edom. Right? Interestingly enough, what does this result in the family? What's Esau's attitude? I'm going to kill him. He respects his dad and won't do it while his dad is alive, but he has made it clear that he bears a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And he says, I'm going to kill him as soon as dad is dead. I'll wait till then. In fact, I think he told anybody he could tell about it that he was going to do it, because Rebekah here tells Jacob, behold, your brother Esau is consoling himself concerning you by planning to kill you. Dan. Yeah.
It was all going to go to Esau. And as a parent, you think about, you don't want to have favorites. And depending on the day, there's different favorites depending on the day.
We're going to see a lot that comes down from the lineage of Rebekah, I think, in this. So Rebekah says, you need to get out of here. Obey my voice. Flee to Haran to my brother Laban. That'll make everything better. And stay with him a few days until your brother's fury subsides, until your brother's anger against you subsides and he forgets what you did to him. Then I will send and get you from there. And then she makes a really strange statement. Why should I be bereaved of both of you in one day? I think what she's saying is that if Esau kills Jacob, what would have to happen to Esau? Have to kill him. That's one possibility. I think the other is that if something like this were to occur, that if you go back to the statement, when does Esau plan on doing this? As soon as Isaac dies, and then he would kill Jacob, and she would be bereaved of both of them in the same day. So, if it's the latter, she doesn't care that much about Esau, right? Because what happens to Esau if he does kill Jacob? He has to, the avenger of blood is to kill him. Go ahead. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of anger going on here. Right. So, Rebekah knows now that Jacob is the heir, she's got to come up with a plan to get him to get Isaac to go along with Jacob going to Laban. So remember, we were told something about Esau. Who is Esau married? And how did Rebekah and Isaac feel about that? They said it made their lives miserable. So Rebekah goes and says, you know, I think we should send Isaac back to my brother Laban and let him pick a wife from there, because how does she feel, what will happen if Jacob marries a Canaanite woman? That's pretty bad, right? The interesting thing is, Jacob agrees with her. And what does he say? He says, you shall not, this is chapter 28, you shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Go to your grandfather's house in Paddan Aram, take a wife from the daughters of your uncle Laban. And then Isaac asks God to bless Jacob. May God Almighty make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may become a company of peoples. May he give you also the blessing of Abraham to you and your descendants with you, that you may possess the land of your sojournings, which God gave to Abraham. It's interesting. What does this tell you about Isaac? And this is how it's worked out, and what does he do? He says, I want you to have the same, I want you to have the blessings that came from my father to me and are due to go to you. Now, Jacob loaded up 20 camels worth of goods and took off for Paddan Aram. He walked 550 miles. Okay? With nothing. And I believe this is pretty much determined by God that he would go with nothing, because there's something Jacob really needs to learn. What is that? Depend on God. Because to this point, how does it look like Jacob's doing in the God department? Not too well. Now, Esau looks this whole situation over. He watches what happens when his father sends Jacob away, and he hears how distressed his parents are about the Canaanite girls, and I can't believe that's the first time he heard that. And when he sees that Jacob gets up and obeys his parents and goes off to Laban to find a wife, he realizes, you know, my mom and dad really don't like these Canaanite women, and I wasn't really supposed to marry one. So I'll fix it. What does he do? He goes over to Ishmael and says, I want to marry one of my cousins. And he does. Does it change anything? Not really. Do you think he could have done it in desperation to see if it would change anything? I kind of wonder about that, that maybe that's what happened. Okay. Well, yeah, because if you think about it, it did not occur to him to seek his parents' approval in who he married until after he had lost the blessing and the covenant. So Jacob departs from there, and this is 28 verse 10. He departs from Beersheba and went toward Haran. Now, this is a really bad, hard journey to take on foot. You basically have to take the Central Ridge Road from Beersheba north through Hebron to Bethel to join the main artery on the Great Trunk Road in Beth Shan. And then it would have taken a couple of days to get from Beersheba to Bethel, and the trip to Haran would have taken over a month on foot. So he stops by the city of Luz. Now I want you to imagine you're getting there. You've been walking. You're going to be tired. And it's getting really, really dark, and you take some part of your clothing and you roll it up and you lay it on a rock and you go to sleep. And remember, it's pitch black. It's really dark. And you have a dream. And you have a dream, and what do you see in the dream? You see a ladder that sets down on the earth with its top reaching up into heaven. And the angels of God are descending and ascending on it. And the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the God of your father, of Abraham, the God your father Abraham, and the God of Isaac. And he restates three promises to him that we've already heard. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and your descendants. Which promise is that?
Land.
Your descendants will also be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. Which promise is that? The nation promise. And then in you and in your descendants shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Here's the spiritual promise, right? And I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done for you what I have promised you. Are you surprised that God would say all this to Jacob? Well, what have we seen so far? Lying, cheating, right?
God had a plan.
And Jacob's not going to thwart that plan, okay? But Jacob, this was part of bringing Jacob around. Because when he wakes up from this dream, he doesn't go, wow, God's talking to me. What's his reaction? What does it say in the text? How does he react to it? Yes, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Now, he sets up a Morah stone. He takes the stone he was sleeping on, and he sets up a pillar, and he calls this place Bethel. What does that mean? The house of God. Now, he makes a vow, but I think his vow kind of reflects the way Jacob thinks at this point. If God will be with me and keep me on this journey that I take, if God will give me food to eat and garments to wear, if God will return me to my father's house in safety, then the Lord will be my God. If you go back through the text, one of the things that's interesting is, up until this point, Jacob always calls God the God of my father, or your God. He doesn't personalize it. This is the first time he will say, then you will be my God. And of all that you give to me, I will surely give a tenth to you. What does this sound like? Bargaining, right? This will get much better as Jacob gets older. But there's a sense in which I think what we see is Jacob affected by the people around him and the culture.
All the people at that time thought gods were localized.
Or they're personal, right? And so I think what we take from this is it's not that Jacob has been some wonderful kind of guy. But God has made a choice, and he has decided how he will carry out his plan. Well, we don't have to read about the next 30 days, but when Jacob arrives, he goes to the traditional place to meet girls. Where does he go? To a well, right? So, and he gets there. I think at first, I'm not sure he was all that worried about the well or about meeting girls. But when he got there, there were three large flocks of sheep near it. There was a large stone on the mouth of the well. Now, they had an agreement between all these shepherds that no one would water their flocks until all the flocks and all the shepherds were present. By the way, this is an indication in some historical records that when this kind of arrangements were made, there was a lot of distrust among the shepherds about water usage. So the way they would solve it is, you don't come up here and water your flock at noon, and then I come and water my flock at 3, and then when the last guy shows up at 5, the well's kind of low. They all do it together. So Jacob meets these shepherds, and he says, "My brothers, where are you from?" And they said, "Well, we are from Haran." He replied, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" "Oh yeah, we know him." Is it well with him?" "Oh, it's well. In fact, here is Rachel, his daughter, coming with the sheep." Well, Jacob sees Rachel, and what we're going to learn later, I think we know why he did this. He encouraged the others to just water your flocks and go. And that's when they said, "No, we can't do that, because we have to wait until all the shepherds are here to roll away the big stone on top of that well, and then we water our flocks together." So Rachel comes up, and Jacob, we just kind of see his personality come right out right here. There's this agreement with all the shepherds not to do this, and he runs over there and skids the rock off the top of the well and helps Rachel water the sheep. Well, he does, but he's also, what a way to get involved with the people of your area, right? The first thing you do is you break their agreement. And Jacob kisses Rachel and lifts his voice and wept, likely out of joy at the successful completion of his journey. And Jacob tells Rachel that he is a relative of her father and that he is her aunt's son. Rachel runs home and tells Laban about Jacob. Well, Laban, he is really glad to see this nephew. And he welcomes him into his home, kissing him repeatedly. And Jacob tells him about the whole reason that he's there. And Jacob, at least in this instance, appears to be truthful as to why he's in Haran. And Laban accepts Jacob, says, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." And Jacob stays with Laban a month. Now, Laban's not an idiot. What is Jacob really good at? Sheep herding. And he watches him, and he says, "You know, why don't you just stay with us, and you name your wage?" What does he want for helping Laban with his herds? Rachel. And why Rachel? Yeah, so the name of the older was Leah, the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful of form and face. Now, what we should understand is, I used to think that this "eyes were weak" was kind of a slam. Well, that, or it was considered that it spoke of fragility or vulnerability or tenderness or a delicate quality. So I get the idea that Rachel is really pretty. She's bright-eyed. Remember, she's herding sheep and she's running and she's just full of life. Leah's probably not, right? Leah's probably not that exciting. And not that she's ugly, it's just she's not Rachel, right? And so Jacob offers to serve Laban 7 years to marry Rachel. Now, you remember when a wife was sought for Isaac, they brought this big dowry, 10 camels worth of gifts for the family. But when Jacob gets there, what does he got? Nothing. Clothes on his back. So it's going to take 7 years to pay the dowry price for Rachel. Now, Laban likes that arrangement. He says, "Well, it's better that I give her to you than to her another man. Stay with me." And Jacob, it says, I love how the text says this. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days. Now that's love, right? He's really enamored with Rachel. Well, the 7 years comes to an end, and Jacob says, time to pay up. And Laban arranged a big wedding feast at night. And in the evening when it was dark, and you got to remember, they don't have ambient light, he slips Leah into the tent. And given how Rebecca is, I can imagine, here's some of Rachel's clothes, here's, right? And keep your mouth shut, just go in there. And Jacob went into her. And we get this little footnote, but we've noticed this before. What happens when these women from this area get married? What are they always given? A handmaid, Zilpah. In the morning, Jacob learns of the deception. What is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served with you? Why have you deceived me? I've had a lot of questions about this all my life. Just how did that happen? But Laban justifies his deception by appealing to a custom. Well, it's not the practice here that we marry off the younger before the firstborn. According to the archaeological evidence, that's true. Because what is a woman in this culture to them? You take marriage, you make alliances, you enrich your family through strategic marriages, right? Well, apparently Leah didn't have a lot of suitors. So Laban's going to fix this by sending Leah in and says, well, I never said anything, but you have to marry the oldest one first to marry the second. And he says, don't worry about that. Complete the week with this one, and we'll give you the other for the service which you shall serve me another 7 years. Wouldn't that work out nice for Laban? Well, what's Jacob going to say? Yeah, yes, sir. Right? So Laban then gives Rachel in marriage to Jacob, and she's given a handmaid, Bilhah. Here's the problem. Jacob loved Rachel more than Leah. In fact, probably in our English version, it's not actually carrying out the real word there. He loved Rachel and he hated Leah. And you could understand that on one level, right? And she had deceived him. Now, what we've learned is that Laban is a shrewd and crafty man. But, in a sense, Jacob reaped what he had sown. He had tricked others, and now someone has really put one over on him. Right? Galatians 6:7 is true. Don't be deceived, God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, this he will also reap. Well, God saw that Leah was unloved, and God doesn't see things the way man does. So he closes. I'm sorry, go ahead, Shane. No, sorry, go ahead. Yep.
All of that is just, it's almost like mirror, and it's really interesting to see the way that it parallels there.
He got it back. Exactly what he had done had been done to him, right? Well, the Lord intervened for Leah because he didn't think it was right that Leah should be hated and not loved. And he opened her womb, but he closed Rachel's. And what we see is that favoritism continues within the family, right? There's now a favorite wife. And because of this, God doesn't approve of Jacob's attitude toward Leah. So Leah conceived and bore four sons. And you can see the conflict in this family. Reuben, see a son. Simeon means unloved, hated. Levi, now this time my husband will become attached to me. And Judah, this time I will praise Jehovah. So she named the child Judah or Jehuda. The children's names then begin to reflect the struggle in the home. And we're going to have to end there. And we'll pick up with chapter 30.